Okay, good morning, everyone. It's a delight to be here. Before I begin the shiur, just want to take the opportunity on a personal note to mention the fact that my grandmother is in the room and it's her birthday, so I want to wish my bubby a very happy birthday. Okay. So we know as a general rule that the Torah is incredibly precise with its language. It does not tell us information without the necessity to do so. So what I'd like to explore with you this morning is a seeming repetition that doesn't happen just twice, but happens three times. The Torah tells us one fact in three different psukim, and we're left scratching our heads trying to understand the need for this information to be relayed not just once, not just twice, but three times. And let me show you what I mean. In source number one, we have the opening verse of yesterday's Kriya Satorah, Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheba Vayelech Charana. And Yaakov leaves Beersheba and he goes to Charan, Vayifka Bamakom Vayalan Sham Kiva Shemesh. And he arrives at the place and he sleeps there because the sun sets. Vayikach Meavnei Makom Vayaseh Mirash Yosav Vayishka Bamakom Ahu. Yaakov takes the stones there, he places them upon his head, places them so he can have a pillow to sleep on, though rocks are not generally the most comfortable forms of pillows, okay? And he sleeps at this location, which the rabbis explain to us as Har HaMoriah. This is where Yaakov encounters God, has the vision of the ladder, and the angels going up and coming down. What I'd like to focus on, though, is the first verse. The Torah tells us that Yaakov leaves Beersheba. We know he's running away from Esav, and he goes towards Charan. The problem is, the Torah already told us that at the end of the Kriyas HaTorah 2 weeks ago, at the end of Parshas Toldos. The Torah tells us that this is in source number one, the very same chapter, Parachav Ches, just five psukim earlier in Pasuk Hey. The Torah tells us, Vayishlach Yitzchak es Yaakov Vayelech Padena Aram El Lavan den Besuel HaMarmi Achi Rivka Eim Yaakov. And Isaac sent Jacob and he went to Padan Aram. The Torah uses the phrase Padan Aram and Charan interchangeably. He goes to Lavan, the son of Besuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esav. So my question is as follows. The Torah tells us, Parachav Ches Pasuk Hey, that Yitzchak sends Yaakov to Padan Aram. So we know that's where he's going. So why does the Torah need to repeat that information to us again? Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheba Vayelech Charana. I know where he is traveling. To further complicate the matters, in source number 3, the Torah tells us in the beginning of the next parak, parak Chav Tes, immediately after Yaakov has the vision where he sees the angels in the ladder, Vayisa Yaakov Raglav, Vayelech Artzav Vnei Kedem. Now Jacob lifted his feet and he went to the land of the people of the east. It's the same location. It's the same destination. Yaakov is heading to Charan. Yaakov is going to Lavan's house. So the same information repeated in slightly different ways, but told to us three times. So what I'd like to do over the course of our time together this morning is understand the need for the repetition and also understand some of the differences that the Torah inserts into the psukim. Because by doing so, we will be able to understand the depth, or some of the depth, that the Torah is teaching us through the reoccurrence of the information. So I entitled this year, Jacob's Flight, One Text, Two Tales. The truth is, it's really three different texts and multiple tales, but I like the alliteration of the T. So I did one text, two tales. It makes it sound a little bit more catchy. So let's start by comparing verses 1 and 2. The same chapter, Perachav Ches, the same information. Why do we need all of this repetition? So comes along Rav Hirsch in source number 4 and shares with us a brilliant insight as to why the Torah repeats itself. And essentially, I'll share with you outside and then we'll read inside. Rav Hirsch tells us that yes, the information on some level is the same, but the Torah is highlighting two very, very different points. At the end of Parshas Toldos, we learn that Yaakov is sent to Padan Aram. Good. At the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, we are learning that Yaakov begins his journey as the third patriarch. We learn that Yaakov is now beginning his life as an individual, no longer sheltered in his father's home. Rav Hirsch writes, now, parenthetically, Rav Hirsch actually writes in German. That was his native tongue. Rav Hirsch's commentary was translated both to Hebrew, which I have for you here, and also into English. We'll read from the Hebrew, right? I would read from the German, but I think I would lose everybody, so I'm going to hold off on demonstrating my German skills, which don't go much farther than Frankfurter. Okay, says Rav Hirsch in source number 4. Im ki kvar amar la'el. Even though the Torah has told us, Vayelech padena aram, harehu chozer umisaper. The Torah goes and reviews and tells us, Vayetze Yaakov miber shava, shekein biyetziya zu, hechela parsha chadasha. With this departure, a new chapter begins. Shekol ikara divrei yimei Yaakov. And at its essence, it is all about the life of Jacob. Next paragraph. So in source number 4, paragraph number 2. Avraham hu hashoresh lebeis Yisrael. Abraham is the root of the Jewish people. Yitzchak hahemshech likras hageza. And Yitzchak is the continuation towards the stem, but it's not. Yitzchak is not the stem itself. Ach Yaakov hageza atzno. Yaakov is the stem. Yaakov is the actualization of all of the potential that Abraham and Isaac were working towards. Mishum kach gam amar lo Yitzchak vayitin lecha es berchas Abraham. That's why Yitzchak gives the bracha to Yaakov that you should be a fulfillment of the blessings that were given to my father Abraham. Hein Yaakov hu asher horish le'amo et shmo v'goralo. It is Yaakov who bequeaths to his people his name and their lot. Amenu nikra lo am Abraham. Our nation is not called the nation of Abraham. Ela Yisrael. We are called B'nei Yisrael. Mishum kach anachnu roim es Yaakov mikayim ve'atzno. And here comes a Hirsch with a magnificent insight. And that is why, because it is through Yaakov that we see the actualization all of the potential that was given to Abraham and Isaac. That's why when it comes to Yaakov, which is the actualization, we find Lech Lecha. Who else had a Lech Lecha? Avram, of course, had a Lech Lecha. If I would have asked you before reading Rav Hirsch, I imagine that most people in the room would say Avraham, and Avraham alone had a Lech Lecha. That's not correct, says Rav Hirsch. Yaakov also had a Lech Lecha. Because everything we see that the Avos were working towards in potential in the lives of Avraham and Yitzchak now actually take place through Yaakov. So we see that Avraham has a Lech Lecha, but we see that Yaakov also has a Lech Lecha. And that's why in source number 1, the Torah tells us, Vayelech Charana. He travels, he journeys to Charan. Because this is the beginning of the story of Yaakov, the actualization of all of the potential that was spoken about to the previous two Avos. So that's why, explains Rav Hirsch, the Torah repeats itself. Perek Chavches Pasuk Hei is simply informational. Yitzchak sends off Yaakov to Padan Aram. Pasuk Yud, 5 verses later, is not informational. We know that already. But it is contextual. It's setting the stage for us of what is to come in the life of Yaakov, the father of our nation in actualization, in reality. Rav Hirsch notes that there is a marked difference between the departure of Abraham and the departure of Yaakov. Who had it easier? Who do you think had it easier? Whose Lech Lecha was easier? The truth is, there's no right answer to this question. But who do you think might have had it easier? Abraham had it easier. Why? When he had to leave, so who accompanied him? His wife, Korach, Husham, whatever that means. If it means his entourage, it means his resources. We know his nephew came with him. So when Abraham left, as the Rav Hirsch is going to say, Kibal be'amo, as a master of his people. I'm not putting down the test. It was an absolutely difficult test for Abraham. But at least when he was traveling with the comforts of the people that surrounded him in his life. Writes our Persian source number 4, paragraph number 3, Shenihu avinu ha'acharon, asher kol ma'aseh ha'avot ad ko rak hechinu es ba'o. This is related to what we were talking about just a minute or two ago, that everything that Avram and Yitzhak did was in preparation for the arrival of Yaakov. Hine gam hu yotze lisbodidus. Absolutely, Avram had to go and have a life of isolation. Achshona yitzia zu mi yitziyaso shel Avram. But Jacob's departure was different than Abraham's departure. Gam Avram yotze lisbodidus mitoch hamoledes. Yes, Avram had to be exiled, if you will, from his birthplace. Achu yotze kibal be'amav. But when Avram left, he was the master of his people. Im isha v'nei bayis, kerovim v'rechosh. He left with his wife and the people of his household, with his resources. He left as a leader. Ach Yaakov, hanisavos gar molo sheyatza mirtzono, mebli lakachas imo me'uma. But Yaakov leaves alone. Yaakov leaves without a dime to his name. I know midrashically we say that Eliphaz came and he stole from Yaakov all of his possessions. Perhaps we'll come back to that point. But Yaakov's departure certainly does not parallel Abraham's departure from this perspective. Abraham left laden with all of his riches. Yaakov did not. As Hakol Hishir le'echav habachor, but Yaakov did so deliberately. He left everything behind to Esav, Leman yada hala, ki bekachtoas habechora, lo nasa es einav l'shum revach omri. Yaakov actually left behind everything purposefully to demonstrate to his older brother that his intent in stealing the brachos had nothing to do with gaining material success. It had everything to do with achieving spiritual success. So how did he make that point to his brother? By leaving everything behind. You think I was interested in the Lexus? You can have the Lexus. You think I was interested in whatever it is, were the amenities of those days, the fancy camel with the air conditioning. It's okay, Esav, you can take the fancy camel with the air conditioning. I'm going on my journey alone. I don't need the resources. It's a beautiful insight from Rav Hirsch. We could spend probably the rest of the lecture delving into the depth, really, of what Rav Hirsch is suggesting, but I just put it out there as a way to understand why we need both source number 1 and source number 2. Source number 2 is informational. Yaakov leaves to go to Padan Aram. Source number 1 is painting the picture, is giving us the context in which Yaakov is leaving. Yaakov is starting his life anew, a new chapter in the book of our patriarchs, the actualization, the reality now of all of the potential that has been building up through Abraham and Yitzchak. A beautiful, beautiful insight from Rav Sham Shon Rafael Hirsch. Okay, now the work really is going to begin. Because now we're going to have to figure out the need for source number 1 and source number 3. The pasuk that tells us that Yaakov is running away before he encounters the vision of God, the latter of the angels. And the pasuk that tells us the same thing, yet it's after Yaakov encounters the vision with the latter and the angels. Let's read the psukim again. And I'd like to ask you to tell me some of the differences and perhaps the additional information that is altogether unnecessary. Source number 1, Vayetze Yaakov mibe'er sheva vayelech harana. Source number 3, Vayisa Yaakov raglav vayelech artza v'nei kedem. So So let's begin by just contrasting the two psukim. What's the difference between 1 and 3? Okay, good. So source number 1 tells us Vayetze, tells us his point of departure, not just his destination. Good. Good, good. Good. What else? I think there's something even more glaring. But, okay, we'll get there in just a moment. Right? So new? Good, good. But let's tell me the difference. What's the obvious difference? Where is he going in source number 1? Vayelech Charana. In source number 3, Vayelech Arza Vnei Kedem. Going to the east. It's the same general location, yet the Torah describes it in different ways. And in source number 3, there is a piece of information that is completely extraneous. We're talking here about repetition. It's altogether not necessary. Does the Torah have to tell me that Yaakov breathed as he was going on his journey? That his heart was beating? I don't think it does, because if Yaakov's heart was not beating, he wouldn't be anywhere. So why does the Torah have to tell me that Yaakov lifts his feet? How else does one walk if not lifting one's feet? It's self-evident. You know, it reminds me of the joke they ask, how do you know that Moshe Rabbeinu wore a black hat? Because the Torah tells us, Vayetze Moshe, Moshe went out. So obviously, if he went out, he was wearing a black hat. Okay, so that's an oldie but goodie. But there are certain things that are so self-evident that the Torah does not need to tell me them. Vayetze Yaakov Raglav, Yaakov raises his feet. Thank you very much, Torah. Okay. Interesting. He went much faster. It's representing the fact he was on the run. Nice idea. Any other suggestions? We'll focus on that point first. The extraneous information that Yaakov raises his feet. Any other suggestions, ladies? Vayisa Yaakov Raglav. Nope. Okay, so let's start by looking at the group of Rishonim who understand this on the physical level. So the Or HaChaim in source number 5 alludes to a medrash that I mentioned a few moments ago, that Yaakov ran away from his father's home, ran away from Esav. He had perhaps some resources. I don't know if it's a machlokas between the medrash and refers. The point is he didn't have a lot. But whatever it was that he was carrying with him, the medrash tells us that Eliphaz met him. Eliphaz is Esav's son. Esav gave Eliphaz instructions to kill him. He felt bad about killing his uncle. So Yaakov said, listen, you take all my money, and on some level, somebody who is completely destitute is compared to someone who's dead. Okay, so that's the Medrash says, that Yaakov ended up having literally no money to his name at all. So ladies, if you have no money to your name at all, what's the only thing you can pick up? Your feet, says Zohar HaChaim in source number 5, Niskavin Vazeh Ki Ani Haya, that Yaakov was taka very poor. V'lo haya lo lisa rak, raglav. Yaakov had no money, and the only thing he could pick up were his feet. Okay, it's an interesting insight from the Or HaChaim. We're left wondering, though, why the Torah highlights this point, this mundane point, in source number 3 as opposed to source number 1. I don't know at what point Eliphaz came and stole Yaakov's possessions. It's ambiguous, but if he only had his feet to raise up because he was impoverished, so the Torah could have told me that in the beginning of the Parsha. Vayetze Yaakov Yerushava, Vayisa Raglav. Okay, I put it out as a question without necessarily an answer. But the Or HaChaim is telling us that literally Yaakov raised his feet because he had nothing else to raise up. Rashi and the Kli Yakar in source number 6 and 7 work towards an additional physical understanding in terms of Yaakov literally lifting his feet, but they don't focus at all on the money, and they focus instead on the nature of Yaakov's travels from Beersheba, depending on how you vowelize the word, and from Beersheba to Har HaMoriah, the location where our rabbis explain Yaakov had the vision. So what's the difference from the way that Yaakov traveled from Beersheba to Har HaMoriah, and then from Har HaMoriah onward? What's the difference? So let's look at Rashi. In source number 6, Rashi writes as follows. The Rabboseinu Pirshu Lashon Tfilah. This is Rashi commenting on the word Vayifka that Yaakov encountered. If you look back in source number 1, it's the second verse. Vayifka Bamakom Vayalen Sham. And Jacob arrived there, he encountered the place. So Rashi tells us that the word Paga doesn't simply mean that he encountered, but it actually means that Yaakov davened. Kimo v'al tifka bi, the pasuk in Yirmiyah where God tells the prophet, do not entreat me, do not encounter me, do not pray for the people. So we know the word paga is associated with prayer. V'lamadnu shetikin tfilas arvis. And we learn, actually, that this is the source where Yaakov introduced the evening prayers. So why doesn't the Torah just say v'yit palel? So the Torah tells us, v'shina ha-kasav v'lo kasav v'yit palel. The Torah doesn't tell us directly that Yaakov davened, l'lamdecha shekofza lo ha'aretz, to teach us that Yaakov literally encountered the mountain. Literally encountered it. There was a miracle. It's called kvitzas haderech. There were many, many miles that Yaakov had to travel, and God did a miracle so that the land folded up between him. Between him and Har HaMoriah, and he literally ran into the mountain. It was brought to him. So what should have taken him many, many hours, it took him much less time. Before he knew it, he was there. It sort of reminds me that sometimes when you're flying, if the plane takes off late, so the captain says, you know, we're able to shave off some time, and we're going to make up the time that we lost on the delay. Kvitzas haderech. I always wondered to myself, if you could make up the time, so why do you wait for the delay to go so fast? You should lechachila travel that way. Okay, not for now. The point is, there was kvitzas haderech, there was a miracle, and Yaakov arrived and literally encountered the mountain Har HaMoriah. Rashi says this is based on the Gemara in Meseches Sanhedrin. So two ideas emanate from the word vayifka, both that Yaakov davened and also that Yaakov encountered the mountain in a miraculous way. End of Rashi. Comes along the Kli Yakar and says, now we understand why after Yaakov is leaving Har HaMoriah, after he has the vision with the ladder and the angels, now the Torah has to tell us, Vayisa Yaakov Raglav, that Yaakov literally picks up his feet. Nu, tell me why. Because from Beersheba to Har HaMoriah, did Yaakov pick up his feet? No, he traveled in a miraculous way. He did not go in the regular way that all of us travel when we're traveling by foot. There was kvitzas haderech, unbelievable! But after Har HaMoriah, Yaakov was back to flying coach. He had to walk the regular way. So in order to highlight that idea, the Torah tells us, Vayisa Yaakov Es Raglav. Vayisa Yaakov Raglav. Yaakov picks up his feet. Writes the Kli Yakar in source number 7 as follows. Lefisha behalicha rishona amru chazal shekofza lo haaretz. When Yaakov originally traveled, it was in a miraculous way where the land folded itself up and he mamish encountered the mountain without anticipating it. V'lefize lo haisa halicha tuluya beziruz raglav. Kim benes. So Yaakov's original travels had nothing to do with lifting his feet. It was miraculous. Chutzrach lomar, therefore the Torah feels the need to tell us, Shemikan v'hala lo halach ayadei kvitzas ha'eretz, ki'im v'raglav kishar adam. But from that point on, Yaakov had to travel in the normal fashion. So now we understand two perspectives why the Torah, in a verse which itself is completely unnecessary, is that telling us an additional piece of unnecessary information. Yaakov lifts up his feet, either according to Rechaim, because the mamish has nothing else left up, he's poor, or according to Rashi in the Kli Yakar, he has to travel normally, Vayisa Yaakov Raglav, because now there's no more miracle. Now he's walking as everybody else walks. Before we move on with our analysis, I want to share with you a magnificent Sfas Emes. I'll share it with you outside. It's really one of my favorites. Just very quickly, when we looked at Rashi in source number 6, I think that everyone in the room, thought that Rashi was sharing with us two distinct ideas that are unrelated. Yaakov davened Marit, Vayifka Lashon, right, Paga Lashon Tfila, and also there was a Kvitzas Haaretz. So it comes along Tzvat Emes and says it's not two different ideas. It's one idea. Ladies, when we daven, Hashem comes to us. When we daven, Vayifka, when we start to open our mouths and try to connect with the Ribono Sholom, there's a Kvitzas Haderech. The Ribono Sholom comes to us. It's beautiful, right? What we think is a chasm, what we think is a gap that is simply one that cannot be closed. We think that we're trying to connect with the Almighty that transcends any physical characteristic trait. How can we connect with something so transcendent? The answer is, we don't understand it fully, but there's a Kvitzas Haderech. And this wide chasm is suddenly closed. And we encounter the Ribono Sholem with such intimacy and such proximity. It's a beautiful insight from the Sfas Emes that the two different ideas that are suggested in Rashi are not two disparate ideas that are unrelated, but in fact one and the same. Yaakov tikin tfilas mariv, but it's done through Kvitzas Haderech, because that's the way our tfilos work. What seems like an insurmountable amount of distance between a mere mortal and the Almighty miraculously is closed. And miraculously we feel like we are literally standing in the presence of the Almighty. A beautiful, beautiful insight of the Sfas Emes. We've got one more Sfas Emes to go a little bit later on. So far we have analyzed the additional information that Yaakov lifts his seat from a physical perspective. But now I'd like to continue on the third page with the Radak, with a metaphysical, with more of an emotional perspective that the Radak explains. And we'll also see the Meshech Chachma along those lines that explains to us both the need to repeat where Yaakov is going, and also the need to teach us that Yaakov is traveling like everybody else travels. Writes the Radak in source number 8 as follows. Vayisa Yaakov Ragov. Yaakov lifts his feet. So what happened after Yaakov has the dream? What happened after Yaakov receives a blessing from the Almighty that, Jacob, wherever you go, I will watch you. Don't worry. I've got your back. So what does that do to Yaakov? He makes a nadir, but what does that do to Yaakov's mindset? It gives him confidence. So when someone has confidence, if someone's walking, when they feel that they own the world, so there's a little bit of a bounce in their step. You can see when someone's walk is a walk of confidence, as opposed to a person who's walking despondent, in desperation, you know, feeling like a terrible calamity is about to happen. Writes the Radak, after Yaakov has the chalom, Vayisa Yaakov Raglov, Yaakov lifts his feet because he walks with confidence. He understands that now wherever he goes, the Ribono Shalom is going to protect him. Writes the Radak in source number 8, Kevan Sheftichu Hakel, after God has promised Yaakov, there, oh, Hamareha Gadol Hazeh, and Yaakov sees this tremendous vision, Samach, he is gladdened, Vinasa Raglav, Bikalus, he raises his feet with ease, V'holach Samach V'tovlev, and he walks with happiness in his heart. Vayisa Yaakov Raglav is not a physical description of how Yaakov lifts his feet, but is in fact an emotional description of where Yaakov's mind was at. When he was running away from Yaakov, when he was running away from Esav, he was shaking in his boots, trembling. I might die. Or you'll see the Radak says that Yaakov knew he wasn't going to die, but he didn't know what was going to happen to him. So there was a real pachad, a real fear. And then he has an amazing encounter with God. Okay, so then, Vayisa Yaakov Vakov, and he can pick up his feet and walk with confidence. Writes the Radak in source number 8, Ki mitchila hayaholich berifyon raglayim, ki adam haboreach mibes aviv atzuv. Originally, Yaakov walks berifyon raglayim. What's rifayon? A weakness, right? A weakness in his knees, a weakness in his feet. He doesn't know what's going to happen to him. Like a man who's so sad to have to be banished from his father's home. Interestingly, the Radak alludes to something that we'll see even more clearly in the Sfas Emes, but writes the Radak, Lohaya Boreach Bechipazon, Ki Boreach Micharev. He doesn't run necessarily so fast like he's running away for his life. Ki Lohaya Mefached Micharev Achiv Kozman Shaya Aviv Chai. He didn't think that Esav would go through with the deed and actually kill him as long as Yitzchak the Tata was alive. But he was still running away, shaking in his boots. He has the vision, oh, Vayisa Yaakov Raglav, now he can pick up his feet with confidence. A beautiful insight from the Radak. And from here, we'll look at the Meshech Chachma and begin to understand why we needed this verse altogether. And we will also understand the difference that we were able to see initially from the opening of the Kriya Satorah, Vayelech Charana, to the opening of Perech Chavtes, Vayelech Artza Vnei Kedem. Originally, Yaakov runs to Charan, and now, after the dream, he's going to the east. What do we make of that difference? So says the Meshech Chachma as follows. I'll share it with you outside, and then we'll look at it inside. Writes the Meshech Chachma that when Yaakov was running away initially, he was so afraid. He was so shaken. He understood, or he believed at the time, that the only place of refuge was Charan. The only location where he would be saved if he found the embrace of his beloved uncle, not so beloved, but if he would be taken in by Lavan, that is the only place where he can find salvation. So, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva with one narrow focus. Vayelech Charana. Because where else will I have help? Where else can I go to seek refuge? But says the Meshech Chachma, after Yaakov has this vision, Yaakov is no longer putting all of his eggs in the Lavan basket. Now Yaakov has the capacity to believe that wherever he goes, he will be saved. Now Yaakov is no longer as trusting in the help of Lavan, and it is even more trusting in the plan of the Almighty. How does the Torah tell us that? Beyond Vayisa Yaakov Lagov. What else? Originally, where was Yaakov going? Vayelech Charana. I can only go to Charan. Where else can I go to seek help? And now, Vayelech Artsa B'nei Kedem. Yaakov is still going, generally, to that same location. But he no longer puts all of his eggs in the Lavan basket. He's able to go eastward. Wherever he should go, Hashem will help him. He doesn't feel as confined and restricted to one specific location. And that is what the Torah is alluding to by that subtle switch. It's no longer Charan. Yeah, it's actually Charan. That's where he's going. That's where he ends up. But emotionally, he does not feel as tied to Charan. Writes the Meshech Chachma in a magnificent insight in source number 9, Vayelech Charana, this is going on the first verse of the Kriyas HaTorah, Perish Shehaya Ger, V'lo haya lo shum habata pratis tachlitis. Yaakov had no other vision or goal in mind. Rak lelech Charana l'mishpachas aviv v'achei imo. Yaakov only had one goal, to run away to his father's family, to the brother of his mother, Lavan. Asher hema ya'azru v'yis'aduhu. Because they're the ones, and seemingly the only ones, that can help him and provide the refuge, the asylum that he is seeking. Aval, kishevtichu Hashem yisbarach, but once the Eibishter tells Yankiv, u'shmarticha b'chol asher teleich, I will watch you, guard you wherever you go. Shuv lo hishkif achara beprat. At that point, Yaakov is no longer looking at Charan specifically. He is no longer, what's tikva? Tikva is hope. He is no longer hoping in Yaakov's family, in Laban. Rak, where is he going? Vayelech Arza b'nei Kedem. He's going eastward. Shaholach l'chol makom sheyazmin lefanav. He will go wherever the Ribbono Shel Olam brings him, wherever it's wherever the journey takes him. Hakol bashkaf achada, all with one perspective. Ki b'chol makom yishmereyu Hashem. Wherever he ends up, the Ribbono Shel Olam will protect him. Ve'elokim ye'imado, and God will be with him. Says the Meshech Chachma, Yaakov's travel plans did not really change, but his worldview changed entirely. He didn't feel the need to be chained to Charan. He had confidence. He understood it's all part of Hashkachas Hashem. And therefore he went with a much broader perspective alluded to in the words Vayelech Arza B'nei Kedem. Another gorgeous, gorgeous insight from the Meshech Chachma. At this point, I feel compelled to defend Yaakov a little bit. What do I mean by that? Well, if you look at the Radak and you look at the Meshech Chachma, you get the sense that Yaakov was like trembling in his boots. He had no other sense that anyone could help him except for Lavan. I think we got to give Yaakov like a little bit more credit. Lamaisa, he was a man who believed in Hashem even before he had the vision. He was a man who understood that the Ribbono Shel Olam has a plan even before we saw the ladder. So we need to defend Yaakov a little bit. I feel the need to stand up for Yaakov's kavod. So I'm going to do that through the vantage point of another beautiful Svas Emes. And the point of departure for this Svas Emes takes us back to two parshas ago, to Parshas Toldos. If you look in source number 11, the Torah tells us as follows. Vayugad l'Rivka is divrei Esav b'no ha-gadol. And Rebekah was told the words of Esav, her older son. This is the words where Esav says he wants to kill his younger brother. Vatishlach vatikra l'Yaakov b'no ha-katan. And she sends and she calls Yaakov, her younger son, vatomrei lav, hine Esav achecha misnachem l'cha l'hargecha. Behold, your brother Esav regrets his relationship to you and wishes to kill you. Vata v'ni shema b'koli. So now, my son, listen to my voice. V'kum b'rach l'cha. Run away, Lavan achicha. Run away to my brother, Lavan. Rivka, really, as a mother, is shaking. My children are going to kill each other. Yaakov, my son, is going to be slaughtered. And she commands him, kum b'rach l'cha. Go and run away. Run for your life. Says the Svas Emes. Does Yaakov run? The answer is Yaakov does not run. He goes back to source number one. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava va... What word is it? Does it say Vayarat Charana? It doesn't say Vayarat Charana. What does it say? Vayele Charana. He goes to Charan. He goes, okay. He listens to his mother. He's a good boy. But he doesn't run. So why doesn't he run? He's trying to make his mom upset. It's like one of those teenagers who call their mom, as they're about to parachute out of a plane. Hey, mom, guess where I am? I'm just 36,000 feet above the ground. See you in a few minutes. He's not trying to cause his mom agmas nefesh. So why doesn't he run? So look what the Svas Emes writes, a magnificent Svas Emes, going on the words of Pasuk in Mishlei, in source number 10, the Pasuk is, As telech lebetach darkecha viraglecha, lo sigof. Then you shall go securely on your way, and your foot shall not stumble. But the Svas Emes focuses on the first part of the words, as telech labetach. Person should go securely, with confidence. Writes the Svas Emes, beautiful words. Ki be'emes barach Yaakov mipnei Esav. The truth is that Yaakov did have to run away. They were dire circumstances. And Yaakov did have to run away. Afa pichen ksiv vayetze vayelech. Nonetheless, the Torah tells us that he leaves and he goes. Lo belashon bericha. Never with this frazzled, sort of haste and anxiety. Ki havoteach b'Hashem be'emes, because the person who truly believes in the Almighty, maven understands ki me'Hashem mitzadei gover, that the Ribbono Shel is controlling everyone, v'lo yisle hadavar b'mikra, and never attributes anything to happenstance. Zehu bechinas Yaakov, this is the meaning, the essence of Yaakov, who is described as ish tam, a simple man. Not that Yaakov was naive, Yaakov was not naive, but there was a wholesomeness, a tamimusness to Yaakov. As Rashi tells us later on in the Torah, on the Pasuk, Tam Im Tiyem Hashem Elokecha, Kibel HaKol B'Tmimus, we are supposed to accept everything with a wholesome belief that Hashem's in control. Below, and look what the Sfasemis writes in source number 12, paragraph number 2, Below Nishtane Klal Al Yedei Bericha Zu. And Yaakov understood that as long as he does his Ishtaglus, nothing will change if he runs away in a frenzied pace, or if he goes, you know, at a good pace, but not with that same level of frenzy and angst and nervousness. Yaakov didn't feel that way. He understood the times called for him to go. He went, but he didn't run. He walked. I don't think he walked in a way that was lacking his status. I think he understood he had to go. He wasn't like taking one foot at a time very, very slowly. But the point was, it wasn't in a frenzied manner. It was controlled. It was collected. Cool and collected. Cool, calm, and collected. That's the way Yaakov walked. Vayelech charana. Because Yaakov understood that nothing changes based on that frenzied attitude. The Ribbono Shel Olam is in charge. V'zu midas hishtavos shekasav b'chovas halavavos. And this is the attribute of hishtavos. What's shaveh? Shaveh is equal, right? There was an equalness. There was a calmness. Yaakov was even keeled because he understood that the Ribbono Shel Olam is in control. And I have to put in my time, I have to put in my work, but I don't need to do so in a frenzied fashion. So Rivka, a mother, so she says, Kum barachacha, run away, run, run, run! And Yaakov listens to his mother, but calmly, in a calculated, calm fashion. Kum barachacha, vayelecha run. So I think this Sfasemis is a beautiful way to sort of even out the perspective that we might have from the Meshech Chachma and the Radak. And the truth is, I think all of it is correct. I don't think anything I've said thus far is mutually exclusive. I think that Yaakov initially had faith in Hashem, but he was anxious, so he didn't feel the need to berach, he didn't feel the need to run, but he felt the need to go. And he felt that he has to go to Haran, because that's where his salvation will come from. And he has to rely on his uncle to help him as he's seeking asylum from Esau, seeking refuge from his brother who wants to kill him. Okay? So that was the way Yaakov thought about the situation. Tremendous emunah, but also focusing on Haran. That's where I had to go. And after he has the vision with the ladder and the angels, and he receives the promise from the Ribbono Shel Olam, so then already Yaakov looks at the world entirely different, and he feels that, yes, he'll still go to Laban's home, but now, B'nai Kedem, the world is open to him. He'll travel eastward, and wherever the Ribbono Shel Olam will take him, he will be okay. So he had strong emunah to begin with, but it was deepened after the encounter at Har HaMoriah. So now we essentially have three answers to the question that we are grappling with. Why does the Torah need to repeat the information? And why does the Torah need to tell us this? The fact that Yaakov lifts his feet? We saw the Radak and the Kliyakar. It was a physical description. Yaakov didn't have any money. Yaakov literally had to travel like everybody else did. No more miracles. And now we have the depending how you want to count it, the next approach of the Radak and the Meshech Chachma. It's an emotional insight into Yaakov's state of mind. He walks with more emunah than ever before. Vayisa Yaakov Vlagov, he walks with confidence, and now he's no longer chained to Haran. I want to end my presentation this morning with a magnificent insight from the Netziv. I use all those superlatives, and I think you might think to yourself, okay, how many magnificent things can there be? But the truth is, that's the beauty of the Torah, that there are an endless amount of magnificent insights from the Mefarshei HaTorah. So the Netziv in HaAmik Davar, in source number 13, draws our attention to that phrase, Artsa B'nei Kadem, and he takes a very different approach from what we have seen so far. The Netziv is not going to necessarily tell us the need for Yaakov raising, he's not going to tell us the need for the repetition per se, but the Netziv is going to tell us that the Torah is focusing our attention on where Yaakov was going and how he planned to get there. Listen to what the Netziv writes. Hinei, source number 13, paragraph number 1, right after the bolded words. Hinei Aram Eino Nikra Eretz Kedem. As a general rule, Padan Aram, Haran, is not usually associated with the land of the east. It is true, factually, it is east of the land of Israel, but you don't always see those two terms interchange, the Aram and B'nai Kedem. Mikomakom Eretz Kedem Bechomakom Mashmao Mizrach Olam. Usually speaking, Eretz Kedem eastward implies the like eastern part of the world, like the far east. Lamakom Shnishtalchu B'nai Keturah. The place where the children of Abraham and Keturah were sent, very far eastward. V'lo matzinu al Aram Eretz Kedem. We don't find a correlation between Aram and the description B'nei Kedem. Ela b'makom shemaskir hamikra shehayu misaskim b'nichosh v'kishuf. We only see the Torah connect the two ideas of Aram and B'nei Kedem in the context of superstition and sorcery and magic. Where do we see that? Actually, that's a pasuk in Parshas Balak regarding Bilam, sort of an autobiography where that Bilam gives us. Kimo Bilam Omar min Aram Yanicheni. So Bilam says, I was taken from Aram, Meharere Kedem, from the mountains of the east. So Vayin Sham Bebir HaMikrazeh, you can look in Parshas Balak for that in interpretation. You can invite me back for Parshas Balak. I'd be happy to share with you the Netziv. But the point is, at this point, that we see that there's a connection between Aram and B'nai Kedem in the context of sorcery. Of course, Bilam is the consummate sorcerer. So that's the connection. Okay. Writes in the Netziv in source number 13, paragraph number 2, the very last two lines on page 3. V'chein kan bazeh halashon Mishum dechsi vayisa Yaakov raglav. Oh, here we go. That says in the Tziv, the Torah is telling us that Yaakov lifts his feet. Uperusho. The explanation is as follows. Shaholich b'derech mifulash. If a person is traveling in an open area, ve'ein bo michshalos, harei ozeb es raglav, shiyelchu me'atzmam. The person is going in safe territory, so you can let your legs take you. People probably, when they go on vacation, you know, even in the English language, you say, wherever my legs carry me, that's where I'll go. When your person lets their legs take them someplace, there's no concern, wherever I end up is fine, it's totally no problem. Visham, you know, visham, you know, b'divar macherim. A person's mind, his eyes, can be focused on other things. I'm not worried. Wherever I end up is totally fine. It's like I think about, you know, you want to go to a restaurant in Teaneck and you go to West Englewood, so all the places are, you know, give or take kosher. So wherever I end up, it's fine. I'm going to go fish, I'm going to go milk, I'm going to go sushi. Wherever you go, you don't have to be so worried. Wherever you go, it's fine. You can think about other things. Of course, if you're from my family, we wouldn't dare do such things. It's very deliberate where we choose to eat. But okay, that's just the Goldberg family. Okay, I say that in honor of my grandmother. Okay. Vizem Mikri, turning the page, Sheraglav nos os oso. When a person is walking carefree, when a person doesn't have to worry about where one is going, so the language that describes that is Raglav nos os oso. Your legs are carrying you. You're not carrying your legs. Wherever I end up, it's totally fine. It's casual. It's carefree. Masha'enkin, says Netziv, Haholich v'makom shahu aluli kashel. When a person is traveling in an area where it's quite likely that they will stumble, right? The word hikashel, lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, in front of a blind person, you should not put a stumbling block. So in a area where it's quite likely that a person will stumble and fall, eino maniach raglav leilich lefi darkan. A person does not allow his legs to simply walk casually. That would be silly. Ela einov birosho lashkiach haraglav shelo tachshilana. A person puts on his very careful glasses and is very, very methodical how he chooses to travel forward. V'ze mikri shehu noseas raglav. That the Torah describes in terms of someone picking up his feet. Not allowing his legs to pick him up, feet up, meaning taking charge in where you go. Vayisa Yaakov Raglav means that Yaakov gave a tremendous amount of thought to every step that he took as he was going forward. Writes in the Tziv in the next paragraph, Vihinei, Vihiyos Yaakov, Be'eretz Yisroel. When Yaakov was living in Israel, Shelo hayu ha-kina'anim mishtamshim az b'kishuf v'chadome. When Yaakov was in Israel, so the people of the land of Canaan were very much idolatrous people, but they weren't particularly superstitious. Rak mishuka'im b'avodah zarah. They were idolatrous people. Okay, it's like a little pick your poison, but Yaakov was used to that. Not only that, he lived in his father's home. U'mizeh hayu Yaakov kar nizhar. Yaakov was very trained to be careful for the traps of idolatry. B'chol beis Avram Avinu ha'aminu she'akadosh baruch hu mashkiach ala olam ve'ev Eloha bilado. Avram's family, and of course that was transmitted to Yitzchak, and transmitted to Yaakov too, but everyone understood you have to be on the lookout for idolatry. V'lohay Yaakov nitzrach lasum lev shelo yikashel v'avodah zarah. In a way, Yaakov was already trained. He didn't have to be so careful about idolatry. He got it. He already separated himself from that one. That was already under his belt. It was not an issue. Last paragraph. Aval. Bihiyoso holeich la'aram. But when Yaakov was traveling to Aram, shahayu regilim benichush kibnei kedem. And remember, ladies, we said that Aram and Bnei Kedem are connected to highlight the sorcery, black magic, superstitious environment of Aram. Shehayu regilim b'kishuf, they were full of these types of practices. V'lazeh nimshach teva lev ha'adam ladas mashiyeh. And it's naturally assumed that people want to know what's going to happen in the future. It's part of the human condition. So now Yaakov was traveling to a place where they knew how to tell the future. Validly, is it all superstition? Okay, that's not for now. It happens to be a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether or not there's validity in superstition. The Rambam, as you probably would imagine, the rationalist par excellence, says the whole thing is a baba maisa. You know what baba maisa means? Bobby, you can explain if they need a translation, okay? The whole thing is a baba maisa. The Ramban, who was a Kabbalist, so he thought there was real truth in superstition, in the celestial stars and the beings and all of the tarot cards, this and that. The Ramban thinks there's real truth to it. He just tells you that the Torah tells us, Tamim Tiyah Mishal Mekecha, we're not allowed to follow it. We're not supposed to figure out what will be in the future. We place our hope in Hashem, that's it. So whether or not there's validity to it is machlokas. But the point is, Yaakov is going into an environment where he's going to be tempted. And then it says, Ad she'asira Torah utanu al zeh. The Torah has to warn us about superstition. Lo yimate b'cha ma'agir b'no vito b'eish kosim kisamim tamim tiyem eshel l'kacha. Shelo yeh ritzoncha ladas asidos. We're not supposed to want to know about the future. U'bilam shibich es Yisrael. This is something that Bilam praised the Jewish people for. Ki lo nichesh v'yakov v'yavor shama. Bilam praises the Jewish people. He sees that we're not people who are allowing ourselves to give in to the temptation of being involved in that type of those types of practices. The Yaakov Avinu, kishayatza le'eretz b'nei kadem, hetira shlo yipo bazeh ha-michshol, was very afraid. Hayisyarem, maybe he was afraid. He was afraid that he should not fall. Al kain nasa Yaakov raglav. Yaakov picks up his feet. Not a physical description. What it means, writes in the Siv, Mashmo Hiluch Shelo Nasa Bidas. He did so with his mind and eyes open, carefully calculating how he would proceed into the exile, into an environment that he knew was going to be dangerous. That's why the Torah tells us that Yaakov picks up his feet, and that's why the Torah tells us that he goes B'nai Kedem, because it's the B'nai Kedem that alludes to the superstition. It alludes to the environment in which he is going to travel. I think this netziv is beautiful on its own right. It helps us understand all of the information of the psukim. But I'd just like to end by noting that I think this netziv is also a powerful model for how we are to integrate into secular society. Yaakov, for the first time, is leaving the land of Israel. Yaakov is journeying into unknown territory. And Yaakov doesn't do so blindly. He's careful, he's considerate, he's methodical how he will integrate. He doesn't not go, he goes. But he goes carefully. I think that serves as a model for us, how we integrate into secular society. It happens to be right now is a time of year when there's a certain cheer in the air. And there are all sorts of secular and worse influences that are out there. And we need to have our guard on. We can't just say, well, it's all good, it's all happy, so it's all seasons greetings and there's no problem. A person just has to be considerate and careful. And we all have to lift up our feet as we travel forward. And not just assume that everything is okay. There is much that is okay. There is much wisdom in the secular world. Chachma v'goyim tamin. That's the Jewish perspective. It's certainly the YU perspective. But we have to do so modeling the way Yaakov traveled. Methodically, carefully, and deliberately. So let me just take a moment to review and then we'll conclude. We started by noting that there are three psukim that seem to say the same exact point that Yaakov travels on. And in the third reference, it has additional extraneous information that Yaakov lifts his feet. So we saw Rav Hirsch explains the first two psukim, the one in Parshas Toldos and Parshas Vayetze, are necessary because one is factual and the other paints the picture for us of what is happening now in the life of Yaakov. He's starting a new journey. He is actualizing all of the potential that has been given to Abraham and Yitzchak. Now it's actually coming into reality through the life of Yaakov. That's why Yaakov has to have his own lech lecha, his own journey, although it was markedly different from Abraham. Why does the Torah tell us that, again, Yaakov traveled to the east by lifting his feet? Or Chaim says he had nothing else to pick up. Rashi the Kli Yakar, that originally he traveled miraculously, and now he's traveling naturally, and that additional magnificent insight from the Sfas Emes, that the essence of Tefillah is encapsulated in that Rashi. Yaakov davened, and there was Kritzas HaDerech. And that's the way that we are able to bridge the gap between us mere mortals reaching out to God and God hearing our calls. It's miraculous. It's a Kritzas HaDerech. And then we saw the Radak and the Meshech Chachma, who don't understand it physically, but understand it emotionally, that Yaakov had much more confidence after he was given the bracha. And that's why it switches from Charan to B'nai Kedem. He's no longer putting all of his eggs in the Lavan basket. But we also saw from the Sfas Emes that it wasn't like he was so scared to begin with. Rivka says, Kum Barachacha, but Yaakov understands he has to walk with an even keeledness, a calmness, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is in control. But that emunah was deepened on Har HaMoriah. And lastly, the beautiful insight of the Netziv, that Yaakov journeys forward, picking up his feet, a reflection of his mindset as he was about to encounter the exile, a land that was fraught with potentially disastrous spiritual consequences. So Yaakov is very careful and calculated how he journeys for us and how that model and how he journeys forward and how that model is for us, how we are to act as we also every day integrate further and further into secular society. And we wish everybody a wonderful day, and it's a pleasure to share words of Torah with you as always. Thank you.